It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. White House Border Czar Tom Homan said this week that more than 1,000 immigration agents have left Minnesota. Hundreds more will depart in coming days. The drawdown comes after the operation that began last year resulted in thousands of arrests and the deaths of two U.S. citizens shot by federal officers.
Over the last month, detentions and arrests by immigration officials were also reported around Wisconsin, affecting people from Eau Claire to Madison and Manitowoc. And an agency that connects seasonal agricultural workers with jobs in Wisconsin says the actions of ICE are leading to fear and fewer applications.
The immigration crackdown led dozens of CEOs from Minnesota-based companies to sign an open letter last month urging de-escalation.
The CEO of Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry, based in Manitowoc, also issued a letter claiming the crackdown was sowing fear and that employees and neighbors are, quote, living with the consequences. And CEO Sachin Shivaram joins us now. Sachin, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate, and I really appreciate your interest in this, you know, in what we're going to talk about.
You wrote this open letter at the end of last month decrying the crackdown in Minnesota, writing that recent events in Minneapolis and elsewhere raised profound concerns. How is this immigration crackdown affecting you and your employees in Manitowoc?
I was at a community meeting right after the killings of Rene Good and Alex Preddy. And we had a meeting at a church basement in Manitowoc, several dozen volunteers from the community. And the consensus what we have all been hearing from our own contacts within the immigrant community is there's real fear. You know, an employee, I was at a shift meeting at our factory earlier that week, and an employee and I were talking, an immigrant, he's from Cuba and here legally. And I asked him, what's the response been? And he said, it's really scary. He told me, they killed people and there are no consequences. And that same fear, we hear repeated throughout people's, from other contacts as well. People are just concerned about going about their daily lives. And it's because, not just because of the violence and the randomness of the detainments and things like that, but because, they're acting in an environment of impunity. There seems to be no higher authority that they could appeal to. And if you can put yourself in that shoe, in those shoes, how that feels. Imagine you're going about your daily life and someone might snatch you from the street and wreck everything that you've built, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that is really scary for people.
As a CEO, you have, a greater, bigger platform, but you are also in charge of a company. What was it that made you speak out and say, this letter has to happen?
I'm part of a number of different, boards and trade groups. And, hopefully it's reassuring for people to hear that, CEOs across America, business leaders are aghast, at what is happening. But they feel, unable to say things, just in this political environment, nobody wants to get their company targeted, and especially if you're a public company or you're selling directly to consumers. And so I was hearing those conversations and thinking about ourselves. We are in the privileged position of having a shareholder body that is 100% behind the feeling that what has happened in Minneapolis and elsewhere is wrong. Our customer base, in fact, we work with some of the biggest industrial companies in America. They have personally told me how they feel, and our employees are behind us. We have about 25% of our employees are immigrants, and we're in small towns across the Midwest, and they understand for the most part that what is going on and wrong. So all of our constituents are with us, and we're in such a privileged position to be able to say something that a lot of other companies cannot. And together with our board, we felt, hey, it's incumbent upon us to speak out and hopefully give others a pathway to saying the same.
You mentioned a staffer from Cuba who is very concerned. Has anyone in your company had interactions with ICE?
Yes, actually, just last week I was on a conference call with the WDC, and All of a sudden, I got up, my phone starts blowing up. It was one of our employees. He's from Nicaragua, and I didn't answer the call, and I text him back, and he texts me. He's like, "I've been picked up by ICE," and so immediately call him. He's in a police car, unmarked. Was picked up by plainclothes officers while he was doing his laundry at our laundromat downtown, and he's here legally, and he was just scared to his core. I mean, he has a family here. He's been here, worked for years in the area and built a life for himself, and he was very worried. And eventually, after a few hours, they checked him out, and he didn't have any criminal record, and so they released him. We also had another employee picked up. So two employees just last week have been picked up in Manitowoc that we know about.
I understand your company has something of a pipeline of visa workers that come from Tijuana, Mexico, to your foundry. Why is there this pipeline of workers from Tijuana specifically?
It's a very curious story. We kind of tapped into this vein of highly talented engineers and professionals in our industry that work for similar companies in Tijuana, and it came through an acquisition we made of a company in Iowa, where the small town Iowa, New Hampton, there's only 3,500 residents, and we employ about 200 people there, and it's hard to find people. And so the previous ownership of that company had brought in one person on a TN visa from Tijuana to be a quality engineer. And when we acquired the company, we realized what a tremendous talent he was. And in fact, he was recently promoted to vice president and general manager of the entire plant. And he has other people that he knows from that community who are equally talented. And so we've been hiring engineers and quality professionals from that area. And then we've extended it to our other plants. We have a project manager in Manitowoc who also came through that connection. And it's because it's just hard to find talent in manufacturing for the types of jobs we do and the skills we require with the demographics that we're up against. As just as well as I do, I mean, we're losing people in Wisconsin, unfortunately, and our companies are growing, and we need good people to keep growing.
Sachin, you mentioned visas, TN visas. Your company has workers with several different types of visas to work here. How have changes from the Trump administration on visas impacted your business and its staff?
The visa process, so it's not just, as you mentioned, not just TN. We have people on L1 and green cards and things. Their processes have been slowed. So far, no one has had anything that's been canceled or anything, thankfully. It's just a slower process. And but more than the slow process, I think it's just the fear and uncertainty that they have, as they're building their lives and things. They just don't know if they things are secure. So that's been the impact more than the actual procedural delays.
Do you think in this climate, your pipeline of workers from Mexico is at risk?
Yes, I mean I can only imagine on the other side of the border, there are people thinking, well, do I want to give up what I have working for my company and in my neighbors to move to something that may well end in disaster, and so I don't have any evidence of that. We haven't tried to recruit a candidate who then has backed out, but I can only imagine there are fewer people interested to come.
How is the economy for you? I mean, we see the Labor Department's jobs report. It showed that manufacturing added about 5,000 jobs in January. Are you hiring now or holding off? What does that look like?
Yeah, we are hiring. We have 60 vacancies today as we speak, which is a lot for us. It's on an employee base of about 1,000, and so we're growing. We're hiring. The economy has started off this year very well for manufacturing. It's driven by just the core manufacturing industry, capital equipment, engines for data centers, things like that are going well. And it's been a market change from last year, which was quite difficult in manufacturing in general. So we're hoping that this continues. And so we're hiring and growing.
Sachin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. A pleasure to be on your show.
That is Sachin Shivaram, CEO of Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry in Manitowoc and chair of the Governor's Council on Workforce Investment. Now, as tensions are high around immigration enforcement, spring planting season is approaching. It's a time when seasonal migrant farm workers traditionally travel to Wisconsin for work. According to data from the State Department of Workforce Development, more than 6,000 seasonal migrant agricultural workers traveled to Wisconsin last year. To learn more about this workforce, we're joined by Jose Martinez, president and CEO of UMOS. It's a Milwaukee-based social services nonprofit, and he's been with UMOS for 30 years. Jose, welcome back.
Well, you know, thank you so much for the invitation, and it's great to be on your show again.
How are actions from the Trump administration affecting the seasonal migrant workforce that UMOS works with?
We're not seeing the same number of folks that have come to Wisconsin ever since the enforcement are not returning back to the state of Wisconsin. And largely, one of the primary reasons that folks are afraid is because, again, if an individual is working at what they consider a perceived type of work that perhaps other folks may be engaged in, then perhaps those individuals can be targeted for enforcement. And subsequently, I think what we've seen in the news, what we've heard in radio stations, that hasn't gone very well. And so that is concerning. And that is concerning for individuals. That is concerning for individuals when you think about their status. Some of those folks are citizens or resident aliens. And their biggest concern is that do they see themselves placing their family members in a set of circumstances where their citizenship will be questioned? And perhaps the type of tactic that is utilized. So therefore, when we are prepping for this year, again, this is February already, and we're looking for our agricultural workers are being sought to come into the state of Wisconsin for either the cultivating, the planting, the harvesting, the processing of agricultural work, then it makes it very difficult for individuals who has relied in this workforce and is making it very difficult for them to find workforce that is willing to come, not only to this state, but other states. Okay.
You know, UMOS, it has been providing a range of different services. And one of those is maintaining both temporary and permanent housing for agricultural workers across several states, including four centers in Wisconsin. Have these workers expressed fears of immigration enforcement showing up at these designated housing centers?
Certainly. I think things that we have to consider, things that we have to plan for, is these type of enforcements taking place. Because, again, if we think about any place where there is concentration of an agricultural workforce, then perhaps they're deemed as targeted areas that perhaps they feel that based on the group, the sector they're targeting for immigration enforcement, then certainly they see that as a huge concern. They see that as a concern from saying, okay, how can we best be protected in these camps? What if ICE officials arrive? And so, therefore, not only are we looking at it from an agency perspective, but those individuals who occupied, these are considered their homes because these are rental homes that they use on a temporary basis. And so the obvious question is, how protected are we in these set of circumstances and trying times that we're living right now?
So if you do see fewer migrant workers coming to Wisconsin, will that have an impact on our agricultural economy and the products that are able to get to market here in Wisconsin eventually after harvest?
Oh, definitely, Kate. I mean, when we start looking at and breaking down agricultural work, there is that work that is we still consider labor intensive, that they still require those individuals to come in and do the harvesting, the picking. So anywhere from when we start thinking about the first set of workers that come into the state for the cherry picking up in Door County. So that could have some profound impacts in terms of being able to identify this workforce, if not keep this workforce, making sure that the workforce is coming in. So it does have a trickle effect in terms of those individuals that are coming in. And then when you start looking at the food processing plants here in the state of Wisconsin. So then they will also have some difficulties in terms of being able to find the necessary workforce to be able to ensure that all the harvesting takes place and the processing takes place. And then aside from the food processing plants, then we have the potato industry. The potato industry has been a growing, thriving industry now here, agricultural, that has been here in Wisconsin. And so it has made its comeback. So certainly those individuals who rely on these migratory agricultural workers that are coming in from other states, they may see difficulties in that juncture. So therefore, I'll tell you what, Kate, only time will tell, because again, we're in February, and I know that a lot of folks are out there recruiting right now to try to bring the necessary workforce that they're going to need for the season. And so then within the next month or so, it's going to be indicative in terms of have they been able to identify all the workforce that they need necessary to be able to make their transition into the state? And two, what would be the shortages in terms of the number of workforce that they're not going to have? So as to your point, Kate, if we don't have enough workforce, obviously that's going to have a profound impact in the state.
Jose, I want to get to wages here. You know, seasonal workers through the H-2A visa program, they're paid an adverse effect wage rate, which is a minimum wage set by data that's collected by the USDA through a survey. From what I understand, last year, the USDA announced it would discontinue the survey. How will this impact seasonal workers?
In terms of our industry, the agricultural industry, there has been a shift in the agricultural industry. Because to your earlier question, have we seen enough workforce coming into a state in terms of this migratory workforce? So if there has been a decline, so then largely you want to be able to depend on the H-2A and say, well, we're going to make up the difference in being able to hire H-2A workers. However, if you are decreasing the wage earnings from the H-2A worker, then perhaps we'll be seeing a preset in terms of an impact. We're not going to be seeing the same number of H-2A workers come into the state.
From what I understand, UMOS receives almost all of its funding from the federal government. Are you concerned that federal officials could pull money for your organization because of the services that you provide to immigrant communities?
Oh, there's always a concern, Kate. You know, we do 97% of our funding comes from the federal government. We do provide a variety of different programs and services, Kate. We operate 54 different programs in many instances. When UMOS had its humble beginnings, we were primal, agricultural based. But over the years, we have diversified, meaning that, you know, we just don't serve the agricultural community. We serve low-income families as well. So therefore, as we are concerned, I mean, we have been impacted already previously based on DEI and the new set of regulations that have come forth from the administration and that impacts the farm worker community. But those are only some of many of the other programs that we operate.
Jose, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again, Kate, for allowing me the opportunity to have this discussion.
Jose Martinez is president and CEO of UMOS. It's a Milwaukee-based social services nonprofit. Earlier, we spoke with Sachin Shivaram, the CEO of Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry in Manitowoc, about the impact of immigration enforcement on his workforce and the broader economy. We also reached out to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement for its response to concerns that enforcement tactics may discourage those seeking seasonal work visas, but we did not hear back.